An update before we bring Jeremiah in. Andre Hunt, one of the two players accused of sexual assault, who was suspended from the football program. Katerian Legrone is the other, but Hunt and Legrone both received a 2.5-year suspension from the university for the allegedly violating the school's sexual misconduct policy. Hunt's lawyer, within the last few minutes, sent out a press release, said that his client did nothing wrong, and that they will appeal his suspension. All right, shifting gears, let's welcome in Jeremiah Searles on this Friday. Hello, Jeremiah.
Hello, buddy. How are you?
Good. Hey, update everybody. You, Tommy Armstrong, and Kenny Bell did a great, great thing the other day. Update people that may not know what you did and what the end result was.
Yeah, so myself, Kenny, and Tommy decided that we wanted for Giving Tuesday to put on a 24-hour charity stream on our Twitch channels where for 24 hours, one of the three of us was up streaming video games live with some incentives to donate to Team Jack Foundation. I personally raised $1,000 on my channel. Kenny raised over $3,000. Tommy over $1,500 on his. For a collective, we raised $5,710 and 24 hours for the Team Jack Foundation to go fight pediatric brain cancer. It's a pretty special deal. We were overwhelmed by all the support we got and all the people that donated. It was pretty cool.
Great stuff. It was such a neat idea, and I'm glad people stepped up. And kudos to the three of you. Watching last night, the Bears and the Cowboys. So you have Kellen Moore calling plays on one side. You have Matt Nagy calling plays on the other side. And Chicago, during the game, Jeremiah, ran the same play three straight times, which may be a rarity in the NFL. But as I thought about watching those two play callers with their respective level of quarterbacks and thinking about how the season unfolded in Lincoln and kind of how we look at football nowadays and in offense, whether it be the college offenses or the NFL offenses, can you be a good game planner but a bad game caller? And could you ever be a good game caller but a bad game planner? Do you see where I'm going here on those two being a game planner and a game caller?
Yeah, I think that the two are definitely not mutually exclusive. I think that you can be really good at one and really bad at another. I mean, I know plenty of coaches. I've been around coaches that know they're not in the moment great game callers, but they can game plan with the best of them so they can delegate really well on game day as far as who's doing what. I know Mike McCarthy is one of those guys that did that up in Green Bay. He turned it over to, was it LaFleur, I believe it was. But I think that there's something to be said about just in the last 4 or 5 years in NFL and college that people have almost out-schemed themselves. I mean, remember last year Matt Nagy and Sean McVay were these next Bill Belichick-type coaches that were going to out-scheme you through everything. And then this year, it's kind of like the scheme's just completely falling apart because there is something to be said about the joy of keeping something simple. And I think that the great coaches know how to, when they feel like they're out scheming even themselves, where they're drawing stuff on the board and they're looking like, oh, this is going to be perfect. It's like, okay, yeah, in my mind it's perfect, but can the 11 guys that need to execute it do it perfectly? I think that's where some of the disconnect happens. It definitely happens in the NFL, but I think we saw a little bit of that in Lincoln this year too. It's just, some of the gadgets, some of the stuff that's worked in the past maybe wasn't working this year because we were just doing too much. And I don't know if that's because we thought we were ahead of schedule where we were with the quarterback play or if we thought we were ahead of schedule with the defense where we could throw more stuff at them versus just relying on kind of fundamentals and base defense type stuff. But I think that they're not mutually exclusive. You can be a great game planner and a bad game caller and vice versa.
Jeremiah Searles joining us here on the Gary Sharp Show. So with that said, help our listeners, help yourself. Just all of us come back off the ledge now that the season is over. What was the idea behind the swing pass all season long?
It's a staple to this offense. And I know people are like, why are we still doing this? Why are we still doing this? But if you watch what Scott Frost has done at Oregon, UCF, I mean, it's a staple. And the reason it's a staple is because the swing pass opens up so much more. The swing pass opens up the RPO. The swing pass opens up the inside running game. And really, through this offense, that needs to kind of be a lot of what makes the engine go. And it worked last year because we had a big body in Stanley Morgan who could break that arm tackle of the corner and take it the distance or get 8, get 10. So that made safeties move over, respect the swing pass, to where this year, we really didn't have that big-bodied receiver that could make that first guy miss or run through that first arm tackle and make the safeties and make the linebackers have their eyes somewhere. Like, they could just be like, you know what, corners, you can handle this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the problem that we ran into with the swing pass is we just didn't have the personnel to execute it. And it's hard when that's a staple of your offense to just kind of throw it away, because then you kind of have to revamp your entire offense. Instead of just the kind of, we'll just keep grinding at it, hoping we get better at it as the season goes on.
How difficult a pass is that?
I mean, I think it's a really hard pass. I actually watched the game with Tommy Armstrong. We watched it together, and he was like, man, Adrian's just struggling to put the ball in the right spot. And I kind of was like, what do you mean? He goes, if you're throwing a swing pass, you need to put it on their upfield shoulder as they're going forward. He's like, That's the only way this play works. And he goes, Adrian keeps putting it on their back shoulder, so they have to physically fully turn around to catch it, and then they either have to spin out of it, or they have to put their foot in the ground and then try and change momentum going the other way. And he's like, sometimes all it takes is that half second for that defender to get off the block or that guy to put himself in the right position versus if you get it to a guy that's running full speed downhill and he doesn't have to make a change of direction right off the bat, you're going to get 2 or 3 yards before he gets touched. So I think the throw is actually harder than most people take it for granted how easy of a throw that might be, because it is really just catch, turn, and throw. I mean, half the time he doesn't even have the laces in his hands. But I think it's something that, because it is a staple, Adrian's got to make sure he gets better at that this offseason.
What else does he have to get better at? Let's say he shows up after Christmas and he's healthy. Okay, so he's 100%. What else football-wise, Jeremiah, do you think is the next thing that he has to get better at?
I think he needs to get better with his quicker decision-making. If you want to play quarterback, you have to be decisive, and you have to make quick decisions and live with those decisions, even if sometimes they're bad, but you did it quick. I mean, it's the old thing coaches always say, I can deal with someone making a mistake at 100 miles an hour because he can fix it.
Yep.
I feel like sometimes Adrian's body and mind were playing it a little hesitancy of, like, maybe they're going about 60 miles an hour because they're afraid to make that mistake, or they're afraid to pull and run that one time because he is dinged up a little bit, or his knee is bothering him, or his shoulder's bothering him, or whatever was bothering him. It's just, there's that little bit of hesitancy. And as much as people joke about, oh, it's a game of inches, yes, football is a game of inches, but it's also a game of, like, milliseconds. I mean, a half second that you can plant your foot and go is the difference between 5 yards and 10 yards, which can be the difference between a first down and a third down and a game-winning drive and a punt. And I think that he just needs to work on his decision-making. I think he needs to work on his decisiveness off the field. And then on the field, I think he needs to realize, I think he needs to get his weight between him, the strength staff, and the nutrition staff. I think they need to find a weight that he feels a little bit more comfortable at, because just watching him play this year, I felt like he moved a little clunky.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like he wasn't as fluid as he was his freshman year. And, I mean, obviously when you get hurt, your body does some crazy things to compensate. But I'd like to see him kind of find a weight that he's more comfortable at, where he can still throw the ball very accurately and well, but also be able to run like he wants to.
What do you do with Luke McCaffrey in the next step in his development?
I think you use him. I think that next year Scott Frost needs to come into spring ball and say there's an open competition at all 11 spots on the offense and defense. And there's nothing wrong with that. People are going to say, oh, returning starters. Like, no, there's no returning starters. Treat it like the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
You earn your spot. Every single day, every single week, every single play, and it's a fluid depth chart. There doesn't need to be a starter named until probably about 2 weeks before the season, in my opinion. That's just kind of what I'm used to. I think that competition breeds greatness. There's nothing wrong with competition. And whoever wins that between Adrian, Luke, or Vedrill, I still think you see all three of them at one point next year, whether it's packages for Luke McCaffrey coming in, whether Luke's starting, it's packages for Adrian. I think that Luke is too good of a talent to have just sitting on the sideline. I think you could use him like the Saints use Taysom Hill.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Saints do a great job with those. He comes in and he's on special teams. He's doing all these different things, but he played quarterback and he's just an athlete. And I think Luke having an offseason to put some weight on, kind of get more comfortable with the offense, get more comfortable with what it's like to be in college. I think having that for him is going to be huge for his development going into next year. And he could be a playmaker, I mean, a special playmaker for this offense in 2020.
What's the most impressive thing Greg Austin did with this offensive line throughout the course of the season?
I think he's keeping them together. I mean, when scrutiny hits, and it usually falls on the O-line first, and it fell on the O-line quite a bit this year, but he kept those guys together. He kept those guys working. A guy like Cam Jurgens, I mean, his improvement from week one to week 12 was remarkable. I mean, a guy like Hickson, he struggled, but he still improved. And then I think that with all the questions being thrown at him, all the can they do it, will they do it, won't they do it, can't they do it, like they did it. They improved. They got better. Was there matchup problems? Yes. AJ Epenesa and Trent Hickson, that's a matchup problem. But there's not a whole lot you can do about that. That's good players on the other side. Mm-hmm. That's having them know we have a struggling younger player on our side that's going to be a matchup. And so I think a lot of that is we just need to get some more talent in the building, more talent, more Austin guys that are going to develop, like a Ben Hart, like a Piper, like a Banks. Those guys that just need to keep chipping away, developing every single day, getting better every single day. I think Coach Austin did a really good job of keeping them pretty even keeled and not letting them ride the wave of emotion too much during the season.
So some guys you just mentioned are guys that we got just a little bit of a glimpse of that we expect in their next year, their second year in the program, their freshman year, that they're going to make that next stride. How about some veteran guys? What's the next step for a Brendan Hymus in the offseason for 2020?
Yeah, I think that you just need to keep developing on your craft. If you're Brendan Hymus now, you've had 2 years in a system. If you're Farniak, you've now had 2 years in a system. You've Paul Wilson, you have 2 years. So it's not as much about learning the system anymore. It's about mastering the system. It's about so you can go out there and you don't even have to think about the play. You just are so ingrained in it and you just know it top down, front, backwards, that you can just focus on your technique. You can just focus on the little play within the play of how are you going to beat the guy in front of me, because I'm not worried about my assignment. Like, I know my assignment. I think if you become a veteran player, the older you get, you worry less about your assignment because you know that you know it, and you worry more about the technique, and you worry more about your matchup that week. And that's where you start watching film differently. That's where you start watching, I mean, everything. You kind of look it through a different lens, and the game slows down a little bit for you. And you can really kind of start to hone in on what you do really well and then work on that in the offseason, become a master of that. And then also look at your film from these last couple of years and what have I struggled with? What are things guys looked at me and did some self-scout? You look at yourself and say, what did guys do to me that gave me problems? Either pass game, run game, like what did other teams and what did teams do that they saw other teams and people copied that all year long because that was one of my weaknesses, and how do I just do better at that? And I think that's something that Coach Austin needs to do with them and the strength staff needs to do with them, is do some self-scouts so that technique-wise, this is where you work on that. Winter, the summer, the spring is where you really work on that, so that come fall, you've been chopping wood at it for the last 6 months and it's not just brand new to you when you hit fall camp.
If you have a wish list for defense of 2020, whether it's you're going out and getting a player out of the junior college ranks that you think is a game changer, or somebody that is currently in your defensive room, what's at the top of your wish list to happen in 2020 on that side of the ball?
I would love for us to have more than 30 sacks. I think we need to be able to have 30 sacks without having to blitz around 38% of the time, which is, I think, what we did this year. We have to be able to generate a pass rush with down linemen and linebackers. I mean, if you want to run a 3-4 outside, a 3-4 system with your three down guys, your two outside linebackers, like, you need to have some ass kickers off the edge that are going to be able to get out to the quarterback. And I didn't see much of that this year. And so whether that's Caleb Tanner, Garrett Nelson, who have good off seasons develop and continue can be those guys, or it's a JUCO guy you bring in, I think that is the glaring number one issue. If you're looking at our defense of what you need to do, we got to be able to generate a pass rush more next year.
Great stuff, Jeremiah. Have a good weekend. We'll continue this. We'll talk next Friday.
Absolutely. Sounds good, Gary. Take care of yourselves and go Big Red.
That's Jeremiah Searles, who has been with us all Friday during the football season. We're going to continue it. We love Jeremiah. We're going to branch out. We're going to talk about more than football. Jeremiah is well-rounded. Big recruiting weekend for Nebraska. One guy they won't have on campus, but they offered to. And what a cool moment. Keegan Johnson, who is from Bellevue West, a 2021 prospect, picked up what you would say was a special honor, and really cool moment yesterday. You've heard us many times on this radio station talking about Keegan. His father has been on numerous times, Clester, along with Cade and CJ, who have played at Bellevue West and gone on to play college football. But Keegan, who I think is the best of Clester's kids, a two-way player for the state champion Bellevue West T-Birds, when he announced his offer yesterday and he put it on Twitter, it was with a picture of his dad making a catch against Colorado that I thought was pretty cool. Smart offer by Nebraska. Not just, hey, it's a legacy guy, but somebody that can help you and you're projecting into the future and you're looking at this town and you see a 2021 class that already has one verbal in it from Elkhorn South. You got an offer at Westside. You got an offer at Creighton Prep. But you also are kind of starting a little bit of a pipeline to a program that is producing players that you think their program sets them up to be college ready, and that being Bellevue West. Now the next step, if you're Nebraska and you offer a legacy who, you know, at times Clester has been, I think, been outspoken. He wanted CJ and Cade to get more Nebraska love, and they were overlooked, and they've gone on, and they had stellar college careers, or continue to have stellar college careers, and that hurts a little bit. You played there, blood, sweat, and tears. You would like your sons to get an opportunity to play there as well. And now Keegan gets that opportunity. If you're Nebraska, you make the offer. Again, smart offer, not, hey, it's Clester's kid. No, we see him as somebody that could help us either side of the football. It's almost like, are you going to say yes? You're not going to take a long time, are you? We really want you. It's okay not to wait till 2021. It's okay to say yes sooner. Look around, but remember, we offered you. It's okay. One other benefit of this, in a town where, you know, you have options if you're a student athlete playing sports, either a boy or a girl, how attractive does Bellevue West football look right now? If you're a quote-unquote free agent as a high school student that plays football, program that's just won a state title, they're playing a sexy offense, they got guys that are going on to play at the next level at various levels, yeah, definitely a win-win all across the board for Bellevue West. But I thought that was a cool deal yesterday with Keegan getting an offer and the way that he announced it. And he's good. He's really good, and he hasn't even come close to how good he'll be. All right, last hour of the Gary Sharp Show for the week. Dirk Chatelain from the World Herald is coming up next. Well, as we do with Dirk every Friday, we go a bunch of different places. So buckle up, boys and girls. We're back with more of the Gary Sharp Show after this.